The problem when you play my favorite artist into a guest is that I just want to listen to the album. But in this case, that's not true because I've been waiting to talk to Sari for a long, long time about her new book, and I'm so excited, and it's very cool. And to know that it was somehow inspired by David Byrne just makes me even more happy. Sari Botten is the author of the new book, And You May Find Yourself, Confessions of a Late Blooming Gen X Weirdo. We get a lot of books in the station. That is my favorite title of this year so far. It is a series of candid, reflective, sometimes humorous essays describing coming to feminism and self-actualization as an older person, second and third and fourth chances, and how maybe it's never too late to find your way, assuming you're lucky enough to live that long. It is a great pleasure to welcome Sari Botten to the roundtable this morning. How are you, dear friend?
I am good, and I'm so happy to be here in person after so much Zoom.
I know. It's pretty cool, isn't it?
It's amazing, and thank you for having me on.
I am thrilled for you. I am thrilled to have you here, but I am thrilled for you. This book is beautiful. It is a, this is almost cliche at this point, but it's so of the moment, Sari. We need this now. I think. A lot of women need this now. A lot of all of us need this now.
Thank you. I had a friend who's a cis straight man tell me the other day how much he loved my book, even though he knows he's not the target demographic. And I said, oh, actually, you are. Women's narratives aren't just for women. And I was reminded of a piece Alexander Chi wrote for the New York Times Book Review years ago about the 3 years during which he only read women. And so, yeah, I think it's not just for women.
Well, and we all, I'm looking at myself, so I don't know about we all, but I certainly, as I was reading this, put myself squarely in Weirdville.
I think everybody feels weird. That's the big secret. Everybody feels weird in their own way, which is what makes this, I think, kind of relatable.
How did you come to this you start the book talking about an event that took place around your 27th birthday. So, like, at what point did you think, okay, I have it together enough to explain this journey that I've been on to explore how you find yourself, of whatever that means?
Well, some of it was logistical. I had left a job. The pandemic started. I got mono. And I suddenly had the time to finally put it all together and a book deal. It all, converged. All these horrible things converged to support me in writing this book. But I also reached an age where it all finally made sense to me. What was the through line of this material that I had been working on for a very long time. And it was this sense that I hadn't really come into myself until much later, and that there were cultural forces, Gen X cultural forces and others that were contributing to it and that people might relate to that.
That you work so hard to please other people that you are suppressing your own happiness, joy, and understanding.
Yes, that is something that I have been wrestling with my entire life. And I think a lot of women and a lot of other people of all genders and all ages really, I think it's maybe a rite of passage to learn not to do that.
It's hard to learn how to do that.
It is so hard. My God, what I've spent in therapy.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. I mean, I'm in therapy. You were in therapy. I mean, I'm not saying that. I know a lot of people probably can do it, but I don't know how I don't know how I would do it without therapy.
Yeah, I have a chapter in there about my my patterns with therapists, and also one particular therapist who broke me of the worst of my habits. A really wonderful, wonderful therapist who I refer to as the swashbuckling shrink, because he was unlike any other. I had been to a lot of women therapists. I had been to the Judd Hirsch in Ordinary People therapist. This guy was like radical. He made me laugh at myself. He challenged me in ways that no therapist ever had before.
Do you think that gender matters in that case? I found a woman therapist who just seemed to be, we've been together now, I don't know, 20 years, perfect. And I cannot I don't know. I can't imagine another person, but I don't know how it was something about speaking to a woman about it, about issues that are so intimate and so close that just worked for me better.
Absolutely. For me, it was really helpful to have this very, like, almost borderline, a little bit macho therapist. As a straight cis woman, it helped me work out my issues with cis straight men, and also to get the perspective of exactly, you know, who I was so mystified about.
I was born in 67. You were right around there.
65.
Okay, so practically the same. So and it is it's really weird being in your mid-50s now and seeing I just talked to my wife about this yesterday. I said I realize today, meaning yesterday, that I'm the age my father retired at. What? How does that work? And a lot has changed.
A lot has changed. I'm the age my grandmothers died at. And they were like, you know, kind of old ladies, and I'm like, I still feel like I'm 11 in ways. I explore a lot of this also in my quote unquote magazine, Oldster, oldstermagazine.com.
Why quote unquote? It's a blog.
Well, it's a newsletter. It's
okay,
a Substack newsletter.
Okay.
But I think it's a magazine. I'm you know, I'm paying people to contribute all the time. But we explore what it means to travel through time in a human body at every phase of life, because traveling through time in a human body is weird. And there, you know, we've been told that there are these norms about what milestones you're supposed to hit when. And I've always done it wrong, which I also explore in the book. I didn't have kids. I didn't know whether or not I wanted them for into my 40s. And I needed a doctor's note to tell me I couldn't do it before I felt permitted to say, oh, well, yeah, I don't have to do this.
Well, that was our situation, too. But once you figure that out, then things get a little easier.
A little easier. Yeah, that and you know, just soldiering through life and learning from living.
I know I'll probably get a letter from a listener about me being superficial, but I just want to I applaud this. I bring this up for two reasons. One is because it's a big deal with Sarah Jessica Parker of her hair going gray. I have gray hair. You have gray hair. That says a lot, doesn't it? I mean, you're making a statement with that, are you not?
I am. I'm making a statement with my hair that you know, it can be beautiful to just be how you are. Now, that said, I don't judge women who choose to keep coloring it. For a long time, I colored my hair in like wide blonde stripes because I thought it was fun, and it was fun, and I stopped doing it when it wasn't fun anymore. But I also didn't feel like I could. It took me years to feel like it was okay for me to go gray. I wrestled with it for like 10 years. Of course, I was also waiting for it to be gray enough that I would feel like Emmylou Harris.
Yes, that was what my wife said. She not about Emmylou Harris, but that she was waiting for it to be gray enough so that it looked, you know, that it looked really gray
and chic.
Yeah,
it's its own kind of
and
chic.
It's really cool. Yeah. Are you so? When you think of, I love how you talk about this idea of second, third, fourth chances. We don't really need to count, do we?
I'm not going to count anymore. I mean, I don't think everybody gets the equal number of chances. I think that it's easier for me as a white woman. I will say that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also struggle to get those chances. And, you know, I fight, you know, when I've been rejected. You know, this is with a tiny press, this book. I struggled to get a traditional publishing deal. You know, anytime I'm knocked down, I get back up. You know, it's like that song.
Chumbawamba.
Yeah.
Chumbawamba.
I get knocked down. I don't even know the words,
but I get up again.
But I get up again, and yeah. I fight for those
Never
chances.
Gonna let me down.
And you know,
again.
there are some gatekeepers who do not want to give me those chances, but I keep fighting for
you
them.
Have a whiskey drink, you have a lager drink, and we go on. All right, you have this interesting idea of these attitudes of should and whatever, and those are poles, aren't they?
Yes.
And I should do this, but whatever. Both come in handy at certain times.
They do. I think it's in the introduction that Gen X grew up at the intersection of should and whatever. And that has to do with a change that our parents went through, particularly our mothers. You know, we were raised by mothers who first were trying to seem like perfect, you know, little astronaut wives,
yes.
You know, and then went through this sexual revolution and they sort of just threw all the rules away. And it was very confusing to us. So we received, you know, very mixed messages about how to be adults. And I think that's why Gen X is often very confused about how to be adults.
I was thinking about that when I was reading your book because I'm the youngest of five and born in 67. So when by the time I came around, you know, my mother had put up with 4 boys for, you know, almost 18 years. And my growing up was much different than their growing up was. And it wasn't until her passing and us talking about it with my siblings, who we all get along very well and are very close, of how different our experiences were, because they remember the mom that you just described, and I remember sort of a hippie badass.
Exactly. They switched. They changed. And it was like a massive cultural shift. And the
by the way, she would hate it if she knew that I called her a hippie badass.
Oh, good thing she's not around
to hear
that.
But deep down, I think she would like it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a compliment.
Yeah.
I think that we observed that cultural shift and nobody explained it to us. And so we didn't know which way to go. And so I think that I have all my life zigzagged between should and whatever. And I ultimately always make up my own rules and follow my curiosity, and it works.
Do you look at this? You have a word in here that just struck me of confessions, and that's an interesting word to me that you chose that word of that these are confessions, which means that it seems to me that it's intimate and that you're sharing things with us that you probably wouldn't normally do. Is that how you looked at it?
Well, it felt like I was confessing some things that I'd been holding on to for a long time, things that I was ashamed of, that maybe I didn't want to be ashamed of, that I wanted to be able to say publicly. But I also wrestled with whether to call these all personal essays. I was the essays editor at Longreads. I edit essays for Catapult and for other places. And there's a lot of disagreement about what makes an actual personal essay. And there are a few pieces in here that are true personal essays with arguments and higher truths. I mean, I think it all has higher truths in it. But some of them are more me just saying, hey, I'm going to admit I had an eating disorder. I'm going to admit that I survived intimate partner violence, which is not something you often hear about from middle-class white Jewish women. Yeah. And so some of it was like, I'm going to confess to some things here.
The book is really stunning and a beautiful, beautiful read. I so enjoyed it, and I hope you are immensely proud of it.
I feel so proud, and I'm so grateful for your kind words about it. That just means so much to me that you enjoyed it.
It's a really beautiful piece of work. You can follow Sari at Sari Botton. It's SARIBOTTON. The book is And You May Find Yourself, Confessions of a Late Blooming Gen X Weirdo. It is published by Heliotrope Books, and you can find it all around the place. Sari, I love having you on. Thank you so much. Best of luck with the volume.
Thank you. I love being here, and thank you.
You're the best. Be well. Thank
you.
You
too.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.